Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Atheists, agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
The government, hug the government, love the government, hug the government, love the government.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by not one, but two conservative counterparts, just like for the weekend show, Jay and May. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, you're holding your own, Mike.
I'm doing what I can.
Yeah.
Battered, but not beaten yet, I guess. So there was a bunch, as always, that we didn't get to during the weekend show that we're looking forward to talking about, especially one case I know I've been following. And May, I think you can kick us off on this, the case about a federal judge and Pennsylvania mail-in ballots.
Yes. So, Pennsylvania, you can mail in your ballot as you can with most places. The election code requires you to fill out, date, and sign your declaration on an outer return envelope. There are some people who don't do that. They either put nothing there, they put their birthday there, they put I don't know. They just make up a date. I don't know. There's just a variety of ways that people can screw up the date. And those votes were basically kind of held in abeyance, not counted. And the question is, what should we do with them? So there was a lawsuit, and it is Pennsylvania State Conference of the NAACP. So our weekend show, also an NAACP case, versus Al Schmidt, who was is the acting secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And the lawsuit is actually one that is, and my organization, Restoring Integrity and Trust in Elections, actually participated in this lawsuit. We tried to intervene, we were not allowed. And so we wrote an amicus brief. But there's a provision of the Civil Rights Act called the materiality provision that one certain lawyer, Mark Elias, is definitely trying to push as a new thing to try and bring election law challenges. And what the materiality provision says is, and I'm going to just read it, that a state can't deny the right of any individual to vote in any election because of an error or omission on any record or paper relating to any application, registration, or other act requisite to voting if the error or omission is not material in determining whether an individual is qualified under state law to vote. Lot of words, but the sort of paradigmatic example of what it was meant to capture is, let's just say state law says you have to be 18 or probably at the time 21 to vote. And then you get to, you go to register and you say, all right, I'm a Black voter, I'd like to vote. And they say, how many months old are you? And you don't know how many months. And so they say, oh, you can't vote because you don't know how many months old you are. Well, the statute never says, or the requirement to vote never says you need to know how many months old you are. It says years. And so you are disqualifying someone based on an error that is immaterial to determining whether that person is qualified under state law to vote. Okay. So how does that relate to dating your ballots? And here's where I think that this court screwed it totally up. So the court said dating your ballot is not material to voting. It matters when your ballot was received. But it doesn't matter whether it wasn't dated, it was dated the wrong date, you put your birthday, like that's not material. Okay, fair point. Maybe there's some other law that applies to the date requirement. But in my opinion, it is not the materiality provision for a couple of reasons. One, the materiality provision has to do with being qualified to vote, i.e. registration. So this was about denying people the franchise, not whether once you have the franchise, whether you screw it up. Whoops, I accidentally thought election day was Wednesday rather than Tuesday. I screwed it up. No one denied me the right to vote, but I did something wrong. And so once you think about the materiality provision in that lens, which is they're not supposed to put these unnecessary hurdles up for you to become a voter. And if you think of it as, is the state having you do something stupid while you vote, or did you do something stupid, something like that? I think that that's the wrong lens. But either way, this was not a surprising decision. The Third Circuit before has basically said the exact same thing that this judge said. Like, if there's something that we don't like about your voting process, we're going to strike it down. The Supreme Court has, Justice Alito has basically said that he prefers my reading, but that's just one guy. So this is something that is going on in multiple other states. The Supreme Court is going to have to address it. But in the meantime, Pennsylvania cannot enforce its dating requirement. So you can put, put your dog's paw on the date and it doesn't matter. It is an immaterial requirement and that vote will be counted. I guess we'll start with our token non-conservative. Mike?
Yeah.
What do we think?
Well, yeah, I think you make a good point about the materiality, the understanding the materiality provision, because it's pretty clear. It says about anything relating to any application, registration, or other act requisite to voting. And voting is not an act requisite to voting. It is voting. And so to me, the plain language reading of this means that this only would apply to anything leading up to the vote. And while I might think that as a matter of whatever principle it is, or maybe there is another provision that would kick in here. But yeah, I don't see how the materiality how that applies here. So, and I understand that the court was when the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court looked at this, I believe they were split 3-3 on whether or not making these dates mandatory is a violation of the provision. And to me, it just doesn't apply to voting. Maybe it should, but it doesn't. So, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you there, I guess. Maybe you guys are surprised at that. But, you know, it says what it says, right? So there you go. I guess to me, and this was something, if I understand the case correctly, and May, I think you have a deeper understanding of it than I do. There was another claim that was raised that wasn't considered, but that came up, and that was an equal protection claim. And as I understand Pennsylvania law, state law allows for undated or improperly dated military and overseas ballots to be counted. But if I read the opinion correctly, the judge didn't rule on that, saying that it was unnecessary constitutional adjudication, meaning that he could decide it on statutory grounds, didn't need to look at the constitutional issue. But it seems to me, if that is the case, in fact, that they're allowing military and overseas ballots to be counted with a wrong date or no date, and not from domestic, you know, in the state of Pennsylvania ballots, that does seem to me to raise a very relevant and important equal protection issue.
So I actually don't have a set opinion on this because, as you say, it was not the primary basis for the challenge. And so it wasn't even something that my organization even briefed in our amicus brief. And it consumes maybe like 1.5 pages of we're not going to address this in the opinion. But certainly there is a principle, and it comes up in Pennsylvania a lot because Pennsylvania gives their counties quite a bit of discretion in counting ballots. So some counties were allowing undated ballots to be signed, some were not. And so when different counties are doing different things and sort of each vote is being considered differently and weighed differently, then you are going to see these 14th Amendment equal protection challenges. But, you know, whether or not that was legitimate or not, I have no opinion except for to note that I think it's reasonable for the case to be brought on that basis. But clearly the court preferred to wade into materiality. So I assume that the court figured that materiality was easier. It's just that the court so screwed up the materiality that I no longer trust their decision making. And this is in Pennsylvania state court, or no, it's a district court. Okay. So this is not the end of the road. You've got materiality cases in Texas right now, Wisconsin, Florida, just everywhere.
I guess, you know, one thing you mentioned earlier is this isn't a case where on the ballot it said, you know, for this to be counted, you have to say how many months old you are or something like that. But if I'm reading this law correctly, that wouldn't matter either, that the state of Pennsylvania could say you have to include how many days old you are at this point. And if it's not correct, then your ballot doesn't count. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be I can't imagine necessarily that being a civil rights or other sort of thing, because I wouldn't think that would target. I wouldn't know how many days old I am. It has nothing to do with my race or, you know, or anything like that. So I guess I'm wondering, we haven't really talked about this. Are there any sort of provisions that you could put on the ballot itself that would be so, I don't know, obnoxious, onerous, that it would, that they would on the face of it be, that a court would say, no, you can't do that. It seems to me that at least under this, there's really nothing, and it would just be a matter of this would not be a wise thing to do. It might depress turnout. And I guess this was less of an issue back in the day when most people just went to a polling place and voted, because there weren't these issues about, well, how do we certify your ballot is your ballot and you are you and that kind of thing. Jay, you haven't weighed in on this yet. What do you think?
I haven't yet. No, I would tend to say with Mary, look, just on the merits of this thing, yeah, materiality, they're not talking about a qualification. It's talking about are you voting within the you know, term of the election. So I tend to agree wholeheartedly on that. And I do think the court got it wrong. Are there things you could require that would go to materiality? Maybe. But again, it would seem kind of weird to do so. I mean, the biggest piece of it is, you know, clarifying and certifying that you are who you say you are when you actually vote. And I don't think that's, again, I don't think that falls within the materiality piece of the statute. I think that falls into voting, right? That's part of the same thing as if you show up in person and they ask for an ID or something like that, which, again, some people think is onerous and other people, like most Ohioans, think is fine. This is one of those, I can't say I have any real super strong feelings on this. It's one of those things that this is one of those cases that I don't think, does this turn elections? No. Does it open the door for potential mischief by, as we were talking about before, weird local officials? Well, maybe. And does it, I guess, add to, you know, potential confusion or distrust of the voting process? Maybe. And therefore, I think it's bad from a policy standpoint. So.
More broadly, I guess I'm wondering, because this materiality clause was written in, I think, 1965 was the last update on this, and I wonder if, given the fact that we vote, many Americans, millions of Americans vote in a very different way now than they did in the 1960s or 70s or 80s, really, that do you guys feel that federal law on voting rights, qualifications, that sort of thing is just not kept up with the way people vote? Because it seems to me that a lot of this is really designed for in-person voting, which was by far the predominant way back then. And so do we need updated federal law on this? And especially I think about 2020 and just everything that happened with COVID-related regulations and then just more people wanting to vote, you know, through mail or wanting to do other forms of alternatives to in-person voting.
You
or
like the drive-through thing at like 2 a.m. where you could go.
Well, and, but I mean, but that's my point, right? Is that federal law was written before any of that was a thing, or is it just, well, no, we don't need federal law. We should have the states figure this out because states are the ones that, you know, control the time, place, and manner, or should at least have the main role in that. Well, Congress can obviously legislate on that under the Constitution.
Yeah. I would say the latter, right? Unless it is, you know, is like we said, sort of the civil rights type question. But I don't think any of this rises. Now, I would say it's probably going to be cast as that, right? Just because that's the way that these things tend to be. But I think state law ought to be clear. And if a state says, hey, when you send in your ballot, we'd like you to date it to make sure that you're voting actually, you know, before the election. I don't think that's unfair or unreasonable.
Yeah. So the RNC actually pointed out a case where they did identify somebody who shouldn't be voting because she was voting for her dead mother. So she got her mom's ballot and then dated it. And of course the date exposed that the mom was dead. So, you know, it's not like a dating requirement is totally crazy. So I think a couple of responses to Mike, which is one, you know, some of these very egregious voting restrictions, you know, just because the materiality provision doesn't have anything to say about that doesn't mean that, you know, the First Amendment Anderson Burdick framework, which basically measures the burden that a voting law requires on its reason. So, there are things that are burdensome, but they have a good reason. Something like tell me how many months you are for no reason would probably not survive that. And that's one of the mischief of the Mark Elias crew is that they're trying to bring tools to be used in ways that they're not supposed to be used. And I just think that there are a lot of problems there. But then, you know, question number two, should we have more federal controls? Like conservatives, I think, are not of one mind here, because on one hand, we want our local governments to have control over local elections. Some people might want you to register with a wet signature. Some might say electronic is fine. And both should be equally, you know, why should the federal government come in and speak specifically to that? But on the other hand, I think you saw this with the amicus brief that actually Mike Johnson, our Speaker of the House, wrote, which is if you have such flimsy rules in your state that I don't trust your outcomes, you know, that seems to disenfranchise the people in my community, because if you're letting non-citizens vote, for example, or you might not be letting them, but you simply don't have the checks to find non-citizen votes, then that dilutes votes nationwide. That affects my people. And so I think it's tough because mail-in voting cannot be a free-for-all. There's just too much risk for mischief. That allowing a full free-for-all is not positive. And of course, while I'd prefer the people to, at their state level, say, oh, this is chaotic and I don't like it and I think we should cut back, or secretaries of state to like have the wherewithal to say, I'm going to do something that's very politically unpopular, but like we got to do it to get trust back in our elections. You know, the idea of having some federal involvement is, I don't think, a unified conservative position. I think there's sort of people are of two minds.
And it works on, it's the same argument on both sides, right? Because on the right, you make that argument, well, the laws are too flimsy, and so we don't trust the result. And many of us on the left say, well, the laws in some places are too restrictive, and therefore we have people being disenfranchised in effect, and we don't trust the result. And so, I mean, you can find folks on both the right and the left are saying, yes, we need uniform legislation, though you guys would want it to be much more restrictive, and I would want it to probably be much more open, and that hence lies the problem, which goes back to Jay's point, I think, saying that, well, maybe it's better to just kind of let a thousand flowers bloom or something like that in various jurisdictions. I don't know.
Yeah. I get where May's coming from of should there be some sort of federal protection to prevent against a overall vote dilution? And this would be a place where conservatives are of two minds. And my sense is any federal remedy would probably just make things worse. And then once the federal government's into it, it's hard to get the federal government out of it. And I would see things just sort of going badly, going downhill, and moving towards more free for all, right? As opposed to greater, let's say, accountability. So
we hope you enjoyed this preview of our supporters exclusive midweek show. If you'd like to hear the rest of the episode, we hope you'll consider becoming a supporter. Supporters get ad-free access to all of our shows, membership in our Politics Guys Discord group where you can join in on the conversation, and other benefits at different levels of support. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/politicsguys. You can also support us through Venmo, we're @politicsguys, or through PayPal. You'll find all of our support links in the show notes as well as at politicsguys.com/support. And if you'd like to get the midweek show, but you're not in a position to become a financial supporter, that's not a problem. Just send me an email at mike@politicsguys.com, and I'll be happy to get that set up for you.